This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Speak Up Effective Communication, the show on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network, focused on elevating our communication and our leadership skills. I'm your host, Craig O'Neill, and in our episode today, we're going to be talking about something that I think every presenter has felt at one point or another, and that is the challenge of shortening a presentation. Now, I'm going to do my best to keep this episode around 20 minutes because the irony of running long on this particular topic is not lost on me. So let's get into it. I want to start with a little bit of history. I've been doing that lately because, hey, that's what I really love to do. And I want to start with a quote I'm almost certain you are familiar with in some form or fashion. And there's a story behind the quote and the point I want to make. And the quote is, "I would have written a shorter letter, but I did not have the time." Now, if you've heard that before, you may have heard it attributed to Mark Twain or Benjamin Franklin or Winston Churchill or Cicero. And here's where it gets interesting. The actual origin of that quote, the earliest verified version, belongs to a French mathematician and philosopher named Blaise Pascal. And this was way back in 1657 in a collection of letters called the Lettres Provincialis. And that's when he had said that. I believe the exact quote would have been more along the lines of, "I have made this longer than usual because I have not had time to make it shorter." Now, Pascal was writing religious letters under pressure, and he was essentially apologizing to his readers for the length, the same way many of us apologize in emails today, typically before we add the TLDR, the too long didn't read acronym. And this sentiment, it was so recognizable, so universally felt, that this sentiment started traveling. And about 60 years later, Benjamin Franklin wrote a version of it in a letter to the Royal Society in London, which is why your instinct to connect it with the Founding Fathers is probably not wrong, by the way, if you've heard that associated to them as I have. That's why. Franklin did say something very close to it. He was just not the first person to say it. Then there was Henry David Thoreau, who used a version of it. Then Mark Twain. Then it was attributed to Churchill. And then Woodrow Wilson and T.S. Eliot, on down to Kurt Vonnegut. And the list goes on and on and on. The fact is, researchers who have tried to trace this quote back to a single definitive source found over a dozen claimed authors. Nobody could agree on the short version of who said it. And I love that. I love that the quote about brevity became one of the most bloated attribution debates in literary history. It almost proves itself because of this. And here's why I spent about 5 minutes here on this before we even talked about anything else, is the problem of keeping things short has been around for a very long time. Pascal struggled with it in 1657. Franklin struggled with it. Thoreau struggled with it. Twain struggled with it. Some of the most disciplined, most brilliant minds in the last 400 years sat down to write or to speak and looked up and thought, "This is too long and I'm not sure how to fix it." And I love this blip from, it was U.S. President Woodrow Wilson. He was asked once about the time that he would spend preparing speeches, and his response was actually in line with this exact problem that I'm highlighting today. Wilson said, "Well, that depends on the length of the speech. If it is a 10-minute speech, it takes me all of 2 weeks to prepare it. If it is a half-hour speech, it takes me a week. If I can talk as long as I want, it requires no preparation at all. I'm ready now." And I love that. Like, 2 weeks is how long you would need for a 10-minute short little speech. If it's a half-hour speech, it'll take him only a week. Wait, this is going like the wrong direction in time. Half-hour speech, only a week. 10 minutes, 2 weeks. Look, this is absolutely a universal. Anyone has felt it. I would argue that in our industry, and automotive repair, even service advisors understand, trying to shorten a lengthy estimate and make it bite-sized and digestible for clients is a very challenging thing, but we must try and we must be able to give it to them in the full context that we can. If you're one of those and you're just like, oh yeah, I've definitely felt this, you might be thinking about a presentation that's too long or a class you need to trim down or a breakout session that got shortened on your last minute of awareness for it, you're in very good company. The struggle is real. History is loaded with people who have experienced it. So you too can just plan on this being something that you're going to have to work in. In fact, since it's so universal, hey, short presentations, you can take some pride in knowing that they take longer to craft and they'll take more of your time. Now we have a word of the day as we do in each episode. So before I get into the strategies here, I want to give you today's word, and the word is laconic, laconic, L-A-C-O-N-I-C, laconic. And we will define that word for you after we hear a brief word from our sponsors who make this show possible. Your partner in technology, Autoflow is able to enhance your client interactions before, during, and after the visit from a single thread. To see how Autoflow makes it simple, visit autoflow.com. Your trusted companion, ShopDog Marketing, is right by your side, attracting the best customers and building long-term growth. Call ShopDog Marketing today or visit shopdogmarketing.com. Cover your communication need and revolutionize your auto repair business with AI-driven call analytics from Inbound. Explore more at callinbound.com. Want a more profitable shop? Start with your service advisor. They are the face of your business, the voice on the phone, and the key to every approved repair. ServiceAdvisorTraining.com is dedicated to giving them the tools and training they deserve. All right, we're back. The word of the day is laconic, and that is an adjective meaning using very few words to express something. Brief and to the point. Laconic. Here it is in a sentence. The most memorable people are often the most laconic. Not because they have less to say, but because they have done the hard work of deciding what matters most. Now, the etymology of this word, I think, is fun. We're going down another history rabbit trail. I'm perfectly aware of it, but you're going to enjoy this one too. Laconic comes from Greek lakonikos. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. I don't speak Greek. But the meaning of that is relating to Laconia, and that's the region in ancient Greece that was home to the feared Spartans. The Spartans were legendary for their clipped, direct speech. They did not waste words. And the most famous example of this is when Philip of Macedon, Alexander the Great's father, sent a threatening message to Sparta saying, "If I enter Laconia, I will raze Sparta to the ground." And the Spartans sent back a single word, "if." I love it. That is laconic. And that is what we are working toward today. And another cool thing on this word, if you look up Spartan on the Webster Dictionary, they have A, B, and C definition on it. Definition C would read simply as laconic. The words are pretty much synonyms in that regard. So a short speech of few words might also appropriately be labeled Spartan. And you've heard that term and you think of it has not a lot to it. Although, yeah, there's a lot to having a short speech. So here we go. Now let's go into our main segment here where we talk about some of the strategies that I've been wrestling with myself for shortening a presentation. And let me give you some context on where these come from. I recently had to take a course that I've developed over the years into well over a 4-hour class. And that required deliberately trimming down to a breakout session size piece. And I thought the breakout was for an hour. It turned out I actually only had 45 minutes. So I finally did the hard work of trimming it down and I had another 15 minutes to go and it was torture. But hey, this is all aimed at an audience too that was also labeled as intermediate. So not beginners, but not advanced advisors either, intermediate advisors. And while that range sounds like, okay, kind of goes either direction. Yeah. Well, that's the problem, because intermediate is pretty much a range of skill and an average of that at best. So it's not any actual person in the room. You have people that'll be on both ends of a spectrum of intermediate. And when you're trying to speak to both of them at the same time, that's really tough. But anyway, these strategies, these aren't theoretical. These are things that I've wrestled with. Each one of them, I think you'll see why and why it's worth thinking about a little bit next time you have to do something like this, whatever the type of presentation it is. So strategy one is this: be very clear on your outcome. Before you cut anything out, you need to know exactly what you're cutting toward. What do you want people to walk away with? If there is more than one thing in a short breakout, what matters most? The outcome becomes your editorial filter. And every piece of content that you look at, you have to ask one question: does this serve that outcome? If the answer is yes, keep it. If the answer is no, or a maybe, or I'm not sure, I'd like to, it's probably a candidate for axing it, for removing it. You can't make good cuts without doing this. Without that outcome, I feel that every piece of content feels equally important and nothing will naturally want to come out, right? Clarity of that outcome is what's going to make the rest possible. And for my recent course, it was titled Relational Advising in the Age of DVI. And my main objective there was for the students to understand what our professional responsibility is in an auto repair shop. And for me, if there were only one thing that anyone really actually pulled out of that class and walked away with, it would be that they would be able to specifically say what their professional responsibilities, and loyal listeners of the show would know that my answer comes from my experience with Bob Greenwood as my coach. When he asked me once in the first class I ever attended with him, "What is your job?" he asked, and I said, "Fixing cars." And Bob corrected me rather sternly, said, "No, your job, your professional responsibilities, make sure the vehicle is safe, reliable, and efficient. That's your job. How can you do that unless you inspect every vehicle that comes into your bay?" Right? This transformed my whole line of thinking and altered the trajectory of my career. And that I know, since I know how those words hit me, I wanted them in that breakout to also have that, because that alone, you walk away with that, it's going to change your thinking enough that your trajectory will be improved. So very clear outcome for me. And that meant I had to be able to tell the Bob Greenwood story and all those other things that go in the room. For me, that was a segment of a breakout I could not do without. And the rest got built around that. Actually, the rest was built, I should say. The rest was had to be trimmed to keep that intact. So that's the first thing. The first thing, again, was to be very clear on your outcome. And strategy two is this: leave them hungry. In a short presentation, you can leave them hungry and then have a plan to sustain them added to this. So it's the same piece here. Leave them hungry and have a plan to sustain them. Once you know what you want your outcome to be, you can be content with that place, that you are safe to leave your audience a little hungry as long as you gave them that. In fact, that's a good sign when you're just doing a breakout as opposed to a full length course. This is going to be necessary. You need to have content that's rich enough to leave them wanting more, but you need a plan to give something to them as well. For me, in my recent presentation, it was a link to this podcast. It's a free resource. There's not a sales pitch in it. It's just a genuine resource that connects those that were in the room with a much wider world and additional experts that have broader ideas than just my own. And I want to be really clear here, and I want to be careful here as well, because there's an easy line that some presenters will cross. And I think a lot of breakout sessions at conference events, since they're sponsored, they run a risk with this. The principle that I have to stress, and it's really important to remember, is that training cannot be a sales pitch. It cannot be. The outreach should not be about a product. The outreach is about information. A lot of times, sponsored speakers are told they can spend 5 minutes to mention stuff about their company or their product. I haven't ever spent 5 minutes on that in a presentation that I can remember in my career. My name and my email are there and people can reach out to me. And if through genuine conversation, there turns into opportunity, that's great. But the point of training is training. The outreach is about information, right? The line gets crossed all the time. And when the whole session becomes a sales pitch wearing the costume of education, your audience is going to feel that. And once they feel that, you've lost them, not just for that reason, but potentially for good. And very few speakers do find the right balance here. But the ones who do lead with genuine value first and every time, I'm going to say this. My measure on this is really very simple. If what I teach is only possible in the product I represent and isn't applicable to all comers, then it isn't a course, it's a demo, right? To me, this is an integrity matter, and I'll probably have to do a topic on this down the line. It deserves its own thing. If I go too far in the weeds on this, I'm sorry. I would trim this out or ask my editor to. It's time for today's Suck Less Spotlight from Autoflow. Today's spotlight is on advisor eye twitches. Listen, clients like to stay informed throughout the repair process, and studies indicate clients are most satisfied receiving text updates versus phone calls. But call you they will, interrupting everything from estimating to quality conversations and your game of solitaire. That is, unless you text them first using Autoflow. With Autoflow's automated text updates, your phone only rings for the right reasons. That way, with less phone interruptions, your eye twitch will definitely suck less. For this and more things that could suck less, visit autoflow.com. Ready to boost your auto repair shop's success? ShopDog Marketing is here to help you. We put customers first using AI to create standout content that ranks. Harness the power of mobile first and voice search and let our expert team help you. Sweeten your revenue with more car count. ShopDog Marketing offers a free guide on using AI to drive more repair orders. Get your guide today and watch your auto repair shop thrive. Visit ShopDogMarketing.com. Every professional auto repair shop needs a trusted communication partner. At Inbound, our established VoIP platform is backed by years of industry experience, guarantees reliable connections, and is combined with cutting-edge AI-powered analytics. We deliver actionable insights that support your business growth. With Inbound, you get more than just calls. You get a smarter, more efficient operation. Get Inbound on your team today and see how we can transform your business. Visit callinbound.com. What if you knew exactly what to say to the price shopper, the upset customer, the person who says they cannot afford it? Every day, service advisors lose customers not because of bad service, but because of the wrong words at the wrong moment. Words That Work is a free phone scripts playbook built for auto service professionals. Every script includes the reasoning behind it, so you understand not just what to say, but why it works. Grab your free copy at serviceadvisortraining.com. For right now, let me lay out what I do not consider a resource, and that is my slide deck. There is one question, and I get this all the time. I just wish this would never be a thing. Can you share your slides? Please don't ask this. Please don't ask this. Please don't offer this if you're a presenter. Your slides, and this is a simple instructional design principle that I will die on this hill, your slides should be useless without you. Yeah, there's a couple good ones that people might just want because there's a really valuable graphic on that. I get it. But look, I guess I would have to summarize it. Why is this wrong? Slides, as I've said, should be useless without the presentation. But look, in my most recent presentation, let me put it this way. There was no workbook from the venue. They weren't doing any of the printing or anything else. And it's a pretty substantial cost. And it's not something I typically managed where I have the whole workbooks and then travel with them and everything else for a small breakout, especially. I didn't print one for the most recent one, but I wish I would have done a single page front and back handout, but I didn't in this particular case. I did invite people to have my email, and I shared corresponding workbook with those that reached out as well. And that's great for those who reach out, but having something actually take away with them is better. And I'll add this to this. A better way to ask a presenter, educator, teacher for additional items is not to ask for the slides. It's just that if you want more, ask them or reach out to them in the way they told you. Ask them if they have any additional documentation on the subject that they are willing to share. Leave it open-ended. Don't say slides specifically. Slides are, while easily replicated these days by AI, do have a lot of work that goes into it and are often ripped off and duplicated. So it can feel bad just pushing a deck out there. But again, it's for me a design principle. By asking if they have any additional documentation they're willing to share, that gives the presenter a lot more, at least a little bit more room to provide you with some additional resources without the constraints of strong prejudice for instructional design and presentation principles. So hopefully you agree with me on that one here. The whole idea there, again, leaving them hungry, but having a plan to sustain them. Strategy number three here. This is where we get into the harder work of it here. This is release the good for the essential. Release the good for the essential. And there's a phrase, and I learned this way back in early college years. I think it was, I want to say it was a creative writing class that I heard this the first time, and I absolutely hated this. You'll hear writers talk about this, journalists too, when they have to cut content that they love. The phrase is super cringy. What they say is, kill your darlings. Yeah. It's attributed most often to William Faulkner, I found out. And interestingly, that attribution is also contested, which feels fitting for this episode, but the principle is sound. Even if the phrase is a little overly dramatic to me, sometimes there's a story, an example, a piece of content that you know works. You love it. You've used it before, but due to time constraints, it has to be removed. I want to offer the reframe for this statement. Instead of kill your darlings, just use that reframe that I introduced this subject with, release the good for the essential, because that's what's happening. The content you're cutting is not bad, and it also doesn't need to be associated with a phrase that sounds like homicide. So trimming good content can be good. You're trimming something that is competing with content that's more important given the constraints that you're working with. You're not destroying it. You're making a choice about what the room needs right now. So coupled with my previous point, I think a well-designed handout or worksheet gives the good things that you're cutting out of the main presentation somewhere else to live. The content that you release from the presentation does not have to disappear. It can live on a page, a simple front and back, fill-in-the-blank worksheet, something that outlines the key objectives, something that gives people a place to take notes. It does two things at once in that case. It holds the depth that the clock will not allow, and it tells your audience that you've thought about their experience before you walked in the room. A lot more prep time, again, goes into making sure these things are possible, but that's why it's harder to do a short presentation. Anyway, I think that's a great way to do more without attempting to squeeze too much into the presentation. And that is a very different message than what I recently did, which was a QR code that says, here's a link, good luck. A few people follow the link. Many do not. The worksheet, that's something that I like a lot better. It's already in their hands, something tangible. Okay, strategy four, design or dialogue. When time is tight, it can seem like engagement could maybe be optional. Like, it's a thing you will get to if there's time. Perhaps you can cut the Q&A, skip the show of hands, just keep moving. That instinct is exactly backwards, although it is kind of instinctual. You'll have a tendency towards it if you're anything like me. But the principle is this: do not eliminate engagement to make room for content. Eliminate content to make room for engagement. And while engagement can never be forced, it also doesn't just happen. It should always be designed into the presentation. If you don't have a planned moment with a clear opportunity for dialogue, you will probably rush right over it. The time will be gone before you realize it. so often this is the case. This is absolutely the hardest piece of all if you're doing a short presentation. And I felt this myself in my most recent case. There were moments, I recall them very clearly, where dialogue was starting to open up. People were starting to share some ideas, and almost on the edge of where like too much crosstalk can go, and it can be hard to reel it back in quickly here. But it was exactly the kind of conversation I wanted. And I had to move on at the same time. I had to cut people off in order to get to the next segment. And I'm wincing now, even thinking about it. And that wince should be telling, because that's what the content was telling me, is you still had too much in there. And I had some planned engagement too, and that worked well, but I put more pressure than I should have on getting through things. And I know I move fast when I am like that. It has been a consistent thing my friends in Toastmasters have tried to help correct. I keep wanting to have too much to say in short speech times. It's terrible. But there's also something else worth talking about here. Depends what the kind of audience you're presenting to. TED Talks are like 18 minutes because that format was built for a general audience that's encountering an idea, possibly for the first time. In our industry, every person in that room is either an expert in their own right or developing along on the subject you're presenting on. They carry into it context that will be familiar, and that context enhances value to your presentation if you'll let it. If you cut engagement to protect content, you're removing some of the highest value material that is in that room that you cannot even anticipate for. Their experience enriches your topic. Do not eliminate engagement to make room for content. Eliminate content to make room for engagement. Very challenging when you only have a limited 45-minute window. Oh my goodness. So in closing, let me drop one more tip, because whether you're writing an email, an estimate, a story, a speech, doesn't really matter. I found that if you just let the ideas flow out from you and get them all down and then organize them, it's a lot easier to trim from there. And the reason quotes like the one Pascal had resonate with us still today, I think, is because he recognized this too. Pascal wrote in 1657 that he did not have time to make his letter shorter. And for 400 years, some of the sharpest minds in history have been making the same confession as I am today. And this episode is my version of it. So, hey, I will probably have to lean on Trace here and our producers to keep this close to 20 minutes. I felt every one of these strategies pulling on me while I built this. So there's some tension that goes through this. Podcasting is a very difficult challenge on this because it's spoken out. And when you're speaking out, even if you have the notes as I do right in front of me on things to try to keep me on pace, I still go in the weeds. Hey, I'm sure a lot of you have felt the same sort of thing. But hey, if Pascal struggled with it and Franklin struggled with this and you're struggling with this, it's not a failure. Not at all. This is the work. And that is what it costs to be laconic, to be Spartan. So thanks for spending the time with me today on Speak Up Effective Communication. I hope this was useful, and I hope your next presentation can be just a little bit shorter for it. And I do appreciate hearing from you on anything that helps. Go ahead and write me a long email. I don't care. Just put your heart out there on any suggestions or topics you'd like to hear us discuss on the show that will help you on your communication journey. You can email me here at speakup@craigoneill.net. O'Neill is O-N-E-I-L-L. And remember, listen up on the app to all the shows on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Now you can go to arpn.app and you can download the app right from there. An easy URL if there ever was. And remember, please listen up to those shows. Remarkable Results Radio with Carm Capriato, Diagnosing the Aftermarket A through Z with Matt Fonslow, Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest, the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast with Brian and Kim Walker, the Weekly Blitz with Coach Chris Cotton. And once again, thank you so much to our sponsors, Autoflow, Shop Dog Marketing, Call Inbound, and ServiceAdvisorTraining.com. Thank you, our listeners, for joining us today. Now get out there, listen up, speak up, and shorten up. See you next time.
You've been listening to Speak Up, Effective Communication with Craig O'Neill on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Craig on your favorite podcast listening app and on his YouTube channel. Let him know what you'd like him to speak up about. Craig is all for advancing the automotive service aftermarket.